We've been doing a series of lessons this year, once or twice a month, on Bible authority, trying to establish authority and an understanding of why it is that we do what we do, and oftentimes why we don't do what we don't do. After all, as we read about the Church of the New Testament, we want to be the Church of the New Testament. There is but one church, according to the book of Ephesians, and we want to be that church. We want to worship as that church worshiped. We want to be organized as that church is organized. We want to have as our head and only supreme leader Jesus Christ, who is the head of the church. But one thing that comes up sometimes as we make that bold proclamation to our friends and family members in the religious world is, how can we claim to be the New Testament church when we have one really glaring thing that we never read about in the New Testament? Something that consumes a great part of our budget, a lot of our time and our energy. That is the building. I don't read in the book of Acts of a church or a congregation that buys property. I don't read in the book of Acts of a church or a congregation that builds and maintains a facility of its own. So how can I say that I want to be a part of the New Testament church when I'm part of a congregation that is doing something that you don't read, at least on the page of a church in the New Testament, doing? One, of course, is the issue with having a building. Because there seems to be two extremes when it comes to problems or debates related to church buildings. Some people argue that we shouldn't have them at all, while other people argue that we should make them as elaborate and multi-purpose as possible. And essentially, it comes down to two extremes of total prohibition, that is, we never read of a church in the New Testament building a building purely for worship practices, versus elaborate excess of, since we don't read about it in the New Testament, we can do whatever we want when it comes to church buildings, and we can build and maintain a rock climbing wall if we want to, and a movie theater for our youths, and a gymnasium for an adult basketball league. So how can we justify our own facility? And where is the scriptural authority for it? And how do we draw the line, or at least know where the line has been drawn, between what is practical, reasonable, and biblical, and what is excessive? This lesson is especially pertinent given two trends here at Monte Vista. One of them is very positive, and the other one is just a fact of reality here. Now, it's very positive that we have continued growth, and that is wonderful. It is great that we have growth, but as we grow, we may receive an eclectic group of people whose backgrounds may be different from our own, and as we grow, we baptize people who may have some religious experience that's different in their past. They may come with misgivings or misunderstandings when it comes to the Bible. So as we convert people to the gospel of Jesus Christ, we teach them about Jesus and we teach them about the church of the New Testament, the church they can read about in the book of Acts, the church they can read about from the New Testament. They may have in their past, religiously speaking, a lot of ideas that they don't find in the New Testament. So it's important that we do teach and present lessons like this so that every one of our members, newer members and older members, are all on the same page as far as why do we have this building designed the way it is and used the way it is. And so that's a good problem to have as a church grows and welcomes new people and baptizes people. That's a good problem to have. But of course, the other side of that is a growing congregation is a congregation that's going to run out of space pretty soon. I say pretty soon. I think pretty soon happened like 3 years ago, though. Now, I know that when we get to summertime, you have a little extra elbow room in the summer. Some of the snowbirds go up north or over to Payson. People go on vacation a little bit more often. Jody Thomas has a lot of room on the Greeley's row back there today because the Greeley's are gone. But boy, when everybody's not on vacation in the summertime, we hit 227 just a few weeks ago. And our parking lot attendant, the security guard, said we had 118 cars. Think about this. We have about 70 parking spots. Okay, ponder that for a sec. We have a little over 70 parking spots and 118 cars that managed to park somewhere. Maybe illegally? No, that didn't happen at all. But that is a reality, that as a church grows, they have a space problem. And we have a space problem that's going to have to be addressed. So whatever happens in the future, whether we buy property or expand the building in some way or knock a wall down here and there, whatever we're going to do as a congregation, we need to make sure that we're doing it according to the pattern that we find in the New Testament, that we're using our building, building a building, maintaining it, using it only in ways that we can find authority for in the New Testament. As it says in Colossians 3, verse 17, whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord. That is, do it with the authority of Christ. And we need to make sure that we're doing that with our building. So let's go back a few thousand years to Dura Europos, which is an archaeological site in modern-day Syria. Sometime between 233 and 256 A.D., the church in Dura Europos bought a house. And it's clear from the archaeological dig that it was at one point just a regular domicile. But that house was then converted into a religious facility for the church that met there. And it was a very simple structure. Here's a reconstruction of it digitally. In this very simple structure that you find in the early 3rd century, you have, on point number 2, a worship room. That's all it was. It was a worship room where the congregation assembled for worship. Number 1 is an open courtyard where they could receive visitors. Of course, houses in that time period always had an open courtyard, so that would be typical of a layout of a home. The room just behind room number 1 there with the checkered floor, it doesn't have a number on it, it's presumed to be a teaching room. A classroom. And number 3, off to the right, with the small checkered floor and the alcove off to the side, was their baptism room. And in fact, the baptistry that's in there has been removed and placed in a museum somewhere else. I don't know exactly where it is, but it's been taken out and reconstructed. There are some frescoes in there, some paintings that were on the wall that they wanted to preserve in a museum. That was a church building in the early 3rd century. Dura Europos represents what is believed to be one of the earliest examples of a church purchasing a facility and converting it or reconstructing it and using it for purely religious purposes. Now, there might have been other churches before the 3rd century that did that. In fact, I would say it's a safe assumption to make that other churches did that. This just happens to be the earliest known example that's been discovered archaeologically. Isn't it interesting then? You go back so long in history, and this is what they used to worship God. This is the facility that they used. It's a very simple facility, but it sure got the job done, didn't it? Isn't it interesting? A room for worshiping, a room for teaching, and a place to baptize people. I wonder what other buildings I can think of that are like that. Now, hold on a second. You say, wait a minute, what about the air conditioning unit? They didn't have that. Or the bathrooms. They didn't have the bathroom. Or the preacher's office. They didn't have the preacher's office. All right. That's all stuff that we can talk about. I have another lesson I'm going to do in a couple weeks. It's going to talk about more of the specifics of what's in a church building. How do you find the authority for some things that we have, like lights and a PowerPoint projector and an air conditioning unit and indoor plumbing, all things that didn't even exist back in the 3rd century, how do you find authority for those things? For now, though, in this lesson, I just want to lay a foundation for a future lesson. I want to lay a foundation that just establishes where do we even get the authority in the New Testament for having a building at all. All right, that's it. I'm not going to talk about fellowship halls today or rock climbing walls or the most elaborate this and that and a laser light system. I'm not talking about that today. I just want to establish as a foundation, where is the authority in the New Testament for having a church building at all? And all the specifics we can deal with on a later date. Local churches are commanded in the New Testament to meet regularly for various activities. All activities that we can read about in the New Testament. And clearly, several of these functions, in fact, most of the functions that the church does, can only take place as a church, many of them on the first day of the week while gathered together as a congregation. You have several examples here. In Acts 20 and verse 7, we have an example of them partaking of the Lord's Supper. In 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verses 1 and 2, that when you're gathered together as a church, you take up a collection. And he says, on the first day of the week. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 25, of course, is one of a go-to passage oftentimes on the assembly, and it's because it makes sense. It's written to Christians, and it says here in Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 25, not forsaking our own assembling together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. That it's implied, that, not just even implied, really, not forsaking our own assembling together. That there is a church that has its own assembling. It is its own assembling. Monte Vista has its own assembling together. We come together as a church. Now, you're still Monte Vista when you're out in the community doing things. You're still a part of the Monte Vista Church of Christ. You're a part of the Monte Vista Church of Christ when you're at home, when you're at work, when you're in your car driving. Yes, you're always a part of this congregation. But there is a time when this congregation congregates. There's a time that we have been commanded to come together, to assemble together as a body of believers and worship God and to stimulate one another to love and good works. So if a church is commanded to gather together, there's authority that's implied in that commandment that if you're commanded to gather together, then you need to have a place to gather together. I mean, if we are commanded to gather, then we must have a place to gather. While James, in the book of James, doesn't mention specifically what kind of place this is, turn to James chapter 2 and notice just a couple details here that give us some clues. In James chapter 2, verse 1, and by the way, I know that in James 2, his point is not to establish authority about a church building. He has a much more important point he's trying to bring out about being selective in the kind of people that you associate with. And that's a huge lesson on its own. You can do a whole sermon on James chapter 2 and the lessons about welcoming people and not being selective and not judging a book by its cover. I understand those are the points of James 2. But just notice a couple of details here. What's implied in James 2 as far as worshiping and gathering together as a church. James 2 verse 1 says, "My brethren, do not hold your faith in our glorious Lord Jesus Christ with an attitude of favoritism. For if a man comes into your assembly," think about that. Your assembly, same idea as in Hebrews 10. It's possessive. It's your assembly. The church at Monte Vista, or the church that James is writing to, has its assembly. And it's not worried about everybody else's assembly. It, as a congregation of people, an identifiable congregation of people, has its possessive, your assembly. So if a man comes into your assembly, what else is there? The fact that it says into your assembly. What's implied by into? That it's a place. It's an indoor place, by the way. That a man comes indoors. You are assembling as a church inside of a building. Okay? If he comes into your assembling with a gold ring, dressed in fine clothes, and there also comes in a poor man in dirty clothes, you pay special attention to the one who is wearing fine clothes. The same, another thing there. Whichever church James is writing to also had an identifiable assembly time. And it was the same place that they met. Because there are visitors here. This rich man and this poor man, they're not members of this congregation. These are people from outside who are coming in that the church is then welcoming into their assembly. And they're showing personal favoritism to a new person who walks in the door. A rich man walks in, complete stranger off the street, who appears to be rich, and you welcome him. A poor man, complete stranger, walks in, and you send him off to the corner. Now again, the point I'm getting at here is that whatever church James is writing to, they had a place and a time that they always met. Otherwise, this rich man and this poor man have no idea when to come meet with this congregation. It was an identifiable place and an identifiable time. Otherwise, these two individuals would have no idea, and it would only be by sheer luck or coincidence that they could ever find a congregation of Christians worshiping together. But the other thing here in verse 3, and you say to the man in fine clothes, you sit here in a good place. What's also in this place? Wherever it is they're worshiping, it's indoors, it's identifiable, it is their regular place of worship so that visitors know exactly where to go to find Christians. And what else is there? There are chairs. There are seats. You sit over here. So whatever structure, whatever place this is, indoors, identifiable, regular place of worship, and there's somewhere to sit. I mean, those are at least some things you can establish about a place of worship that gives us some authority. So is there a pattern then in the New Testament that we can establish? Is there some way that we can read Acts or the epistles and we can learn based on a pattern that we see? If they meet here and they meet here and they meet here, and can that pattern then be applied to today that we need to keep? Well, let's look at some of the places that they worshiped in the New Testament. First of all, they worshiped in the temple complex. The very first church that belonged to Christ met in Jerusalem. Began in Acts chapter 2 on the day of Pentecost when 3,000 people were baptized and added to the Lord's church in their baptism. The church in Jerusalem initially met in the temple complex, which was a facility in Jerusalem that encompassed approximately 20 acres. They met there in Acts chapter 2 and verse 46. We read in Acts 5 verse 42 that when it was necessary or convenient for the church, they did other things in their homes. They practiced hospitality in their homes and they partook of meals together in their homes. At its peak, this church was huge. Several thousand people made up this congregation. At least 5,000 people made up this congregation, which means that there was not one single home that they could have met in. In fact, in Jerusalem, probably the only place that was reasonable for all of them to meet for worship would have been in the temple. And it continued to grow. Acts chapter 6, verse 1 says they experienced continued growth. Little side note there. They experienced continued growth, and nobody in the congregation said, this is a problem. Nobody thought continued growth was an issue. In fact, they saw continued growth as a good thing, and they wanted to be together. As Monte Vista grows, and this, I'll say this is a little bit of opinion, okay? Let's go ahead and take a step back. This is opinion. I like it when a church sticks together. That's just me. I like it when a church sticks together. That as a church grows, we grow together. Yes, the numbers grow, but we all get to know each other. We grow together. As a church grows, you know, it's just a building. It's not a sacred place. It's not a special place. If we've got to knock a wall down or add something on over here, who cares? It's just a building. But if we can do anything to just a building, just bricks and mortar and wood, if we can do something to accommodate a larger crowd, I'd rather have a church stick together and be a larger crowd and maybe be a little inconvenient, kind of squished in for a while we raise money to expand the building somehow. I'd rather sit a little uncomfortable in an auditorium, but look around and go, these are people that I've known, that I'm getting to know. These are people that we're growing together. We're getting to know each other more. I like to see a church growing. And when Jerusalem was growing, and they were hitting 3,000 and 5,000, nobody looked around and said, you know, we should really splinter off and do something else. Now, if they had decided to do that, I suppose that was within their authority to do that. But nobody in Jerusalem looked around and thought, this is a bad thing that we're growing and we're really tight right now. Nobody saw that as a bad thing. I think there's just a little bit of opinion and personal experience there maybe, but nobody in Jerusalem thought it was a bad thing that the church was growing. And we shouldn't either. They saw in Acts 4, verse 4, in Acts 4, verse 32, in Acts 6, verse 7, they saw oneness and fellowship and unity and sticking together as high priorities in that congregation. But there are other facilities that we read about in the New Testament as well. The early Christians, as we read about, frequently met in homes, 1 Corinthians 16, verse 19, Colossians 4, verse 15, Romans 16, verse 5. Aquila and Priscilla had a congregation meeting in their own home. And this would have made sense, that for small groups that were often persecuted in their local communities, meeting together in a home would have been the most expedient and probably the safest way to go about worshiping and teaching together. There were Christian groups that sometimes met in synagogues, at least initially. In Acts chapter 19 and verse 8, the church in Ephesus, they met together in the synagogue in Ephesus until the people in the synagogue didn't want them there anymore. They kicked them out, and eventually they had to meet in a school, the school of Tyrannus that we can read about in Acts chapter 19, verses 9 and 10. Now, whether this was a schoolhouse that they bought or a schoolhouse that they rented or a schoolhouse that they borrowed or was given to them, it doesn't say in the text. Nevertheless, the point remains that it was within their authority not just to meet in a home, not just to meet in a synagogue, not just to meet in the temple, but it was within their authority to find whatever facility was convenient and expedient for them in their situation. And in Ephesus, the right thing to do for Ephesus was to use this schoolhouse. That was the right thing to do in their circumstance. And I think in whatever age you're looking at, whatever part of the world, whatever is most expedient for the circumstances of that congregation is what that congregation ought to do. And obviously, there doesn't appear to be any pattern in the New Testament. When you've got churches meeting in the temple in Jerusalem over here, and a church meeting in someone's house over here, and a church renting a school over here in Ephesus, and people meeting under a tree over here for the hour of prayer, and you know, there is no pattern. And trademark pending, where there is no pattern to be found, there is no pattern to be bound. Maybe I'm not the first one to come up with that, but it sure feels like I am. But I think it's true, though. Where there is no pattern to be found, there is no pattern to be bound. You can't bind a pattern that doesn't exist. And I don't see a pattern in the New Testament at all. I see churches that met wherever was right and expedient and convenient for them in their circumstance. That's the pattern that I see. I don't see anything beyond that in the New Testament. Are there any restrictions, though, that we see? Anything that, you know, kind of provisos or anything like that? The lack of a pattern in the New Testament does not give us permission to use a building for just whatever we want. A coffee shop or a gift shop or a rock climbing wall or you know, whatever we want, or a laser tag facility. Just because there is no pattern doesn't mean we have permission to just do anything that we want. Because whatever facility we choose to build, or whatever facility we choose to rent, or whatever facility we choose to use in whatever way, whatever facility we choose still has to have scriptural purposes. Because the church can only do what God has allowed the church to do. The church can only do what God has allowed and commanded the church to do. So whatever building we use needs to be used in a way that God has commanded it. We are given important scriptural work. We're the body of Christ. We represent Him in this world. And we have the great gospel that we need to spread to all mankind. That is an important job. And we need to make sure that the facilities that we have reflect the work that we're supposed to be doing. You can read in the New Testament, or you can watch previous sermons in this series from just a few months ago about what the scriptural work of the church is. The scriptural work of the church, as we read in the New Testament, is limited benevolence for other Christians, edification and admonishment, that means to build each other up, biblical education, teaching the Word of God, fellowship and worship, the spreading of the gospel, and the support of preachers and missionaries. That's the work of the church. So whatever facility we have as a church needs to be for those works. And nothing else, nothing beyond that. And does our facility meet those needs? Is our facility used for worship? Is our facility used for education and edification? Does our facility meet those needs? Last point is this. What about excess? Because the argument is sometimes made, I don't believe that churches should own property or build buildings, because you look at all these examples out there of these elaborate structures and the mega churches that, you know, they'll go buy an old basketball stadium in Houston and convert it into a 20,000 seat 20,000 seat Joel Osteen Emporium. The elaborate cathedrals from the Middle Ages all over Europe. These cathedrals that took, decades or even centuries in some cases to build at the cost of incredible treasure and human life. And then you look today at churches that just put so much emphasis on their building. It's all about the building. The million-dollar commercial-grade kitchen over here and the beautiful, elaborate worship facility over here. And I just think you see all this excess. Churches shouldn't have buildings at all because of all the excess. And there is some validity to that argument in this sense. When we look at the excess, that should teach us something. That mankind's tendency is toward excess. If we can build it bigger, if we can build it more elaborately, if it can look nicer, fancier, if we can one-up our neighbor somehow, if we can keep up with the Joneses, that tends to be kind of our natural default setting. But I don't think that somehow make some kind of a blanket or umbrella statement of we shouldn't have a church building at all. That just because somebody can abuse a concept, just because somebody can abuse an idea, just because somebody can abuse an expedient, doesn't somehow mean we shouldn't take advantage of the expedient or the idea or the concept. And I'll give you a basic example here, okay? Back in James chapter 2, we establish that there's authority that when you worship, you can have a place where you can sit, right? James chapter 2, you bring in this man, you say, you may sit over here. Implied in that idea is there's a place to sit in your assembly. So we have the authority to have seats. Now, if we wanted to, I suppose we could set up 200 heated massage chairs, right? I mean, it's a seat. It's just a seat, 200 heated massage chairs. So just because somebody can chime in and say, well, we have the authority for chairs, so let's have 200 heated massage chairs, that doesn't somehow invalidate the concept of we need to have a place to sit. Just because somebody can abuse an idea doesn't mean the idea itself is somehow invalidated or is null and void. So I don't know. The argument about excess has some validity, if only to just keep us in mind of, it's just a building. And we have brothers and sisters in Christ who are starving in other parts of the world, and we're going to be called to account on the last day. And I don't want to love a building so much that I have forgotten the most basic and fundamental concepts of my Christian faith. I don't want to love a building so much that I forget what is supposed to go on inside that building. I don't want to love a building so much that I forget that my Christianity is supposed to be expressed not just in a few hours of worship one day a week, but it's supposed to be lived out there. The resources that I have, my money and my time. I don't want to be so in love with a building that everything has to happen at the building. That we don't believe in fellowship in other parts of our lives. That we don't welcome people into our homes and practice hospitality and visit people. The only time I ever see anybody is at the building on Sunday. It's just a building. And sometimes that definite article becomes pretty hefty. The building. Well, it's just a building. It's just a building. You got to be the church inside the building. Now, if you're not a Christian here this morning, I will tell you how to become a Christian, how to become a part of the church. You believe in Jesus Christ with all your heart. You confess that belief before others. Put your sins behind you and get baptized. Mark 16:16 says, "He who believes and is baptized shall be saved." It's time to put on Christ in the waters of baptism if you've not done so and become added to His church. Whatever spiritual needs you might have, please let it be known by coming forward as we stand and sing.